with the 14th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. Ladies and gentlemen, we are almost there. The 2017 NFL Draft is right around the corner, and we're here to bring you the latest here on another edition of the Journey to Draft podcast presented by AAA. I am Chris McPherson, joined alongside by Fran Duffy and Alex Smith. Gentlemen, just over a week away until the festivities begin.
Fran, do you start getting like sad around this time of the year, or do you get happy?
I get excited because I get ready to study the 2018 NFL Draft.
I know you're already. You've already been.
No, I haven't.
A little
I
bit.
Haven't. I haven't.
You've watched
I haven't
a
at
few
all.
Guys.
I haven't at all. I'm actually been. This class has been a really fun one to study because there's so many talented players. I was just talking about that today with somebody because you know now all these mock drafts are starting to really come out, and you're seeing so much variety with the Eagles, right? I mean, we saw Josh Norris put his out this week for Charles Harris. We saw Chris Collinsworth put out one on Tuesday with Tre'Davious White. We've seen Derek Barnett. We've seen the receivers. We've seen other corners. We've seen Christian McCaffrey all over the place. I wouldn't stick my nose up to any of these players. They're all really good talents. So I'm really excited about this draft.
I think that's one of the reasons for me that this draft is so much fun is because it's very top heavy, but you don't quite know who's going where. It seems like we know that Myles Garrett should go number one, you know, unless you buy the smokescreen that they're considering a quarterback there. But after that, it's like the draft really begins with the San Francisco 49ers at number two.
Yeah, yeah, it's a huge domino to fall. And we talked about it on a podcast earlier this offseason. Whoever the Niners take, they could go, you know, a million different ways. They could trade out of the pick. They could keep it. They could take a running back. They could take Fournette. You know, they could take a quarterback for all we know. They could go a million different ways. So, you know, there's so many questions, and I think a lot of it hinges on that second pick. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it.
I would actually hate to be, and I've said this before, and people like look at me like I've got three heads. I would actually hate to be picking in the top five in this draft. I love where the Eagles are picking. I think that if you're in that, you know, 12 to 50 range, and now every team has a pick in that range, but if you're in that range, that's kind of like the sweet spot. There's so many talented players that are all very bunched close together in that class.
You just picture Howie Roseman and Joe Douglas sitting there, twiddling their thumbs, being like, who's going to fall to us?
Who's going to fall?
That's going to be the biggest thing. So keep your fingers crossed for quarterbacks to be selected in the top 13. And speaking of quarterbacks falling into potential of that, we're going to bring in just a little bit Tony Pauline. He's going to be our draft buzz and our Mr. Relevant all in one this week because we are going to go rapid fire, position by position. What's the latest that he's hearing? He does phenomenal work at draftanalyst.com. Almost every day he's putting out the latest buzz, the latest innuendo, the latest gossip that's going on around in league circles. He puts it out there, and he's going to let us know all the dirt on what's going on, not just with the Eagles, but all the positions around the NFL. Our pick six this week is going to be six players who we think are going to go higher or lower than the consensus in mock drafts. And then we're going to get to your questions. But first, before that, we have an unofficial visit with, I wonder if he'll be in play for the Eagles, maybe on day two, early day three, possibly, Rasul Douglas, the cornerback from West Virginia. Fran had a chance to catch up with him at the Senior Bowl. And, of course, last but not least, we'll have your questions. So we want to thank you all for the great support we received for the podcast. We have Melissa Kelly handling things behind the glass this week. So let's kick things off here with Draft Buzz and Mr. Relevant all rolled into one with none other than Tony Pauline.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
We are proud to welcome back to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. This week's Mr. Relevant, Tony Pauline, who's been breaking news left and right over at draftanalyst.com. So, Tony, we're going to do things a little different this week. We're going to go rapid fire. We want the latest buzz, innuendo, everything that's going on with the draft. So we're going to fire at you from all directions. You ready, Tony?
I'm about as ready as I can be. Bring it on.
All right, so let's start with the quarterback position. Obviously, the Eagles don't need one, but certainly they're going to hope that teams in the top 13 will take them. How many quarterbacks will be selected before the Eagles are on the clock at number 14?
I'm going to say one. There is that would be Mitch Trubisky. There is a slight chance that Patrick Mahomes could eke his way up there, but I'm going to say right now for this conversation, just one.
Tony, do you think that Trubisky is absolutely the first one off the board? I know you mentioned Mahomes. Is there a chance that Deshaun Watson goes first? It seems like Deshaun Kaiser's shine has worn off a little bit.
Deshaun Watson, no. I mean, there's a slight outside chance that Patrick Mahomes could go before Mitch Trubisky. Someone told me yesterday that they weren't feeling all the love that's in the media for Mitch Trubisky. They think he could fall. But listen, you know, the Cleveland Browns like him. They have two picks in the top 12. So I think it's about a 99% chance Trubisky's the first quarterback off the board.
Well, Tony, we know that the quarterbacks always get bumped up, especially in the first round. The Eagles obviously don't need one at number 14. But could that number 14 spot be a spot where teams look to trade with the Eagles to potentially move up to get a quarterback?
You know, you would look at the Houston Texans as potentially a team that would trade up to get the quarterback. But I heard yesterday that the Texans really want a player that's going to help them in 2017 because the coach in the front office needs them to win. So I don't think that any team's going to trade up or going to pick up the phone and call the Eagles about trading up to that 14th slot for a quarterback.
All right, Tony, let's go to the running backs. And this is a story that you've been all over. What's going on with Christian McCaffrey and apparently this report that a team in the teens has guaranteed him that if he's still on the board, they'll run to the podium?
Well, yeah, I mean, and this sorts of things happen. I mean, I don't know that they happen as far as guarantees, but teams say all the time, yeah, we're going to draft your guy. You're going to like, we're going to, you know, if your guy's there, we're going to draft him. The information I received was that, and it was basically a partnering with, not a partnering, but a follow-through with Mike Florio, who said that the McCaffrey had turned down, basically declined all private workouts. And somebody came to me and said, well, the reason he's declining private workouts is the team is guaranteed that in the team that they're going to take him, they may even trade up for him. Now, you know, unless you have heard the conversation, unless you tape the conversation, which is a big topic of conversation these days, or got the email, you know, it's going to be tough to basically figure that out or find that out. Although the source did tell me, you know, whatever team drafts McCaffrey, watch the contract that they give him, because if there's any sweeteners or anything like that, you know that they did in fact say, hey, listen, if you're there, we're going to draft you.
All right, Tony, so if Christian McCaffrey is definitely off the board at some point in the teens, perhaps earlier, is Leonard Fournette going before McCaffrey for sure? What do you think his ceiling is, and what do you think his floor is? How far could he potentially fall in this draft?
I think his ceiling is second to the San Francisco 49ers. If they hold on to that pick, his floor is eight. The Carolina Panthers are anywhere in between. The Jacksonville Jaguars could select him. The New York Jets could select him. The Tennessee Titans or the New York Jets could trade down for a team like Carolina or Cincinnati that wants to trade up to get him. So as far as I'm concerned, I've not heard that he won't be the first back taken off the draft. He's always been my number one rated back, somewhere between the second pick and the eighth selection.
Tony, what's the deal with Dalvin Cook? Could he perhaps slip into the second round? And if so, would that be more because of medical or off-the-field issues?
There's a slight chance, I heard this yesterday, that he could slide a long way, and it was because of a combination of medical and off the field. I think when all is said and done, he's too good of a running back. He's a complete back as far as an interior runner, a guy who can turn the corner and a pass catcher. So I think he's going to go top 10, but there is a feeling out there that he could slide because of both the medical and off the field issues.
Tony, another running back with off-field concerns, Joe Mixon. Will he be drafted at all?
I said back in January when he declared he's not going to be drafted for no other reason than you know, being a strong-headed or pig-headed, whichever term you like. I'm going to say that he's not going to be drafted. He could end up going, but I think if he goes, it's going to be much later than people predict or project. The fact of the matter is, there are only a certain number of teams that can draft Joe Mixon. You can't bring him to a big market. Both the Jets and Giants can use Joe Mixon. He's not coming to New York. You can't bring him to any teams in Los Angeles or San Francisco, other cities that may need backs. He's going to have to go to a small market team, because the problem is everyone wants to talk about the comparisons to Tyreek Hill. There was no video of Tyreek Hill. And whatever team drafts him at any point during the seven rounds, on all the local news that night, that video is going to be there, and it's going to be questions that not only the owner but his teammates may have to answer to. So it's going to be a distraction. I'm going to say he's not going to be drafted. Wouldn't surprise me if he is eventually selected, though.
Tony, let's get to the wide receiver position. And obviously there seems to be a big three in this draft with Corey Davis, Mike Williams, and John Ross. What order do you think the top three will come off the board when it's all said and done based off what you've heard leading up to the draft?
You know, it's going to, as far from what I've heard and the way I have them rated, is Mike Williams, Corey Davis, and John Ross. But I think it's going to be a tight squeeze. I think what happened is it's not going to be where Mike Williams is the 10th pick of the draft and John Ross is the 26th pick of the draft. I think all those guys could go anywhere between 10 to 20 in round one.
Tony, looking at Corey Davis, we know that he hasn't been able to work out for any teams during this process. What's his ceiling right now as far as how high he could go and how far could he potentially drop?
I don't think he's going to drop all that far. I think he's going to go right in that area between where the Tennessee Titans select with their second selection. I believe that's the 18th pick, and Tampa Bay chooses because they still need, they still like to have some, even though they signed the big name in the offseason, they would like to bring in some more pass catchers. I'm sure he's going to go somewhere, once you get into the 18, 19, 20, 21 range of the first round.
Tony, which team will be the first or could be potentially the first team to select a wide receiver, whoever it is?
Yeah, I think it could be the Buffalo Bills at number 10. I mean, I think they like Mike Williams. They could go cornerback. I don't buy into all the quarterback talk that's been out there. I think that's kind of a smokescreen. I think they're looking at either a receiver or they're looking at a cornerback. Could be the receiver, Mike Williams.
Tony, we've talked about the top three, but who is number four in, based off what you've heard? Is it Juju Smith-Schuster, Zay Jones, Chris Godwin? There's so many names. Taywan Taylor's being thrown out there. Who in your mind do you think leading up to the draft, based off what you've heard, is the number four receiver to come off the board?
Well, two out of three ain't bad. It's not going to be Taywan Taylor. It's going to be the Juju Smith-Schuster or Isaiah Jones. I think the sleeper would be Carlos Henderson, because he's one of the few guys after John Ross at the receiver position who brings vertical speed. So a team that's looking for a vertical receiver could take Carlos Henderson a little bit earlier than many project. But I think in the end it's going to be Juju Smith-Schuster followed by Zay Jones.
All right, Tony, let's move over to the tight end position now. And obviously O.J. Howard is tight end number one on seemingly everyone's board. If he's there for the Eagles at number 14, would that be an option for them?
Yeah, I think when you look at the team, first of all, if O.J. Howard falls to 14, it's probably because there are some sort of red flags that have popped up on him. As I've said in numerous interviews, he was great at the Senior Bowl, but when you watch his senior film, at times you're looking at a guy who looked disinterested as far as a blocker is concerned, really wasn't involved in the offense, although it was a running offense. So if he starts to fall out of the top 12, that some of those concerns and those red flags have popped up. I don't think the Eagles would take him at 14. I think the best-case scenario is if he happens to fall to the 14th selection, the Eagles could then look to potentially trade down to a team like the Tennessee Titans, who would love to have O.J. Howard.
Tony, let's go to the offensive line. It's been considered an uninspiring crop this year, but still someone's going to go in the first round. Who will be the first offensive lineman selected in the 2017 draft?
Yeah, in my mock drafts for the longest time, I've had Garrett Bowles, the premier left tackle in this draft, going number 20 to the Denver Broncos. The other guy who could go before him would be Forrest Lamp. Garrett Bowles has got great upside, but he's not a sure thing. Forrest Lamp really is the offensive lineman that's got the limited downside risk, and he can play several positions. I'm going to say right now Garrett Bowles, but it wouldn't surprise me if it's Forrest Lamp.
So, Tony, outside of Bowles and outside of Forrest Lamp, is there anybody else you think could go in round one and potentially move some other players down the board to the Eagles with the 43rd selection? Would a Cam Robinson, Ryan Ramczyk, Dan Feeney, anybody else that you think could potentially slide into round one, or do you think all of those players, for different reasons, are second-round selections?
I think Ramczyk is a first-round pick. I think Cam Robinson is a late first-round pick. Feeney could slide into the late part of round one to the Atlanta Falcons, but if he slides into the late part of round one, it means that Cam Robinson's probably going to fall out. I think it's a combination of the of two of the three guys that you mentioned. Ramczyk, I think, is a definite first-round pick, and either Robinson or Dan Feeney.
Moving over to the defensive side of the ball now and looking at the edge rusher position, we know all about Myles Garrett, who's most likely going to be the first overall pick, but who do you think is going to be the second pass rusher to come off the board, and how many of those players come off in the top 20 or so?
You know, Solomon Thomas is the second-rated defensive lineman, and he is a tremendous pass rusher. You know, as far as an edge rusher, I think he'd do a good job in a 4-3 as an edge rusher, so you got to consider him in there. Derek Barnett is another guy, so that would be number two. I don't know that Jonathan Allen is a pure edge rusher in the definition that's thrown around today, although I think he is a pretty good pass rusher. Really, as far as the top 20 is concerned, the only other guy that would be in that conversation right now would be Hassan Reddick of Temple, who's going to go somewhere in the middle of round one.
Tony, there's a lot of buzz about whether or not the Eagles could select an edge rusher there, number 14. You think Derek Barnett could be in play? Do you think Charles Harris could be a potential pick for the Eagles there at number 14? And how do you compare the two, Derek Barnett and Charles Harris?
Well, I think they're two totally different players, and I know there's been a lot of talk about that lately. I am not a fan of Charles Harris in round one. I think he's a bit one-dimensional. He's basically an around-the-edge rusher. Derek Barnett is to an extent, but Barnett's a little bit bigger. He's a little bit stouter at the point of attack. I do think that Harris can play standing up in a 3-4 where Barnett is solely a three-point out of a three-point stance, a defensive end in a 4-3. I like Barnett's game. I like Harris's game. I just think he's a bit too one-dimensional for me. I struggle to see that type of player going in round one. I don't think the Eagles are going to go in that direction, but if I had to make a choice, I would say it would be Derek Barnett.
Tony, when you mentioned Solomon Thomas earlier, it seems like he's kind of the consensus at number two. Everybody's got him locked in there for the San Francisco 49ers. Do you see it that way? And do you kind of see him as really the second best prospect in this class? Or, you know, is it more of just a product of the position that he plays?
I think it's a little bit of both. But as far as San Francisco is concerned, one of three things is going to happen. San Francisco is dying to move out of that second spot. They may take less than market value to move down, collect some extra selections, because they need bodies. They need players. So that would be their first option. Then it would be Solomon Thomas. There's also talk, as I reported last week, about Leonard Fournette. They're ready to give up on Carlos Hyde. In a perfect world, they want to trade down. As far as Solomon Thomas, I mean, the guy is a beast. He's a relentless pass rusher. He gives effort against the run. He's more than an edge pass rusher. He shows a good inside move. He plays with great fundamentals. Got to see him at the combine. He looks like he's ready to step on the stage at a Mr. Universe contest. That's the type of frame that he has. There is some concern that he may not be able to get that much bigger, but, I mean, man, the guy is a great athlete who plays all out on every down, and I think he's going to be a terrific fit wherever he's put on the defensive line. Is he the second-best player on the board? I think it's nip and tuck between he and Leonard Fournette.
You mentioned Jonathan Allen a little bit ago, Tony. Where do you see him ending up?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to fall that far. I mean, I think in the last mock draft that I had, I believe I had him going to the Jacksonville Jaguars with the fourth selection. He's had some injury concerns. He did not work out well, but the tape doesn't lie. They talk about he's got arthritic shoulders. Well, anyone who's competed in any sort of high collision sport or serious working out has some sort of arthritic condition when they're in their 20s. It doesn't mean they're going to get arthritis when they're in their 20s. It could come when they're in their 40s or their 50s or their 60s. So I think the arthritic shoulders is more of a media talking point than it is anything that's going to affect Jonathan Allen. The guy's a terrific player. He was highly rated coming into the season. He met the expectations of scouts. I think he'll be off the board with the initial five selections.
Tony, let's go in the mock draft archive back to the fall. And a player from Michigan State, Malik McDowell, was once mentioned as a potential top five selection. Is he this year's Bob Kimdichie, who was selected number 30 overall by the Arizona Cardinals last year, where tons of talent, but some questions about his hustle and his motor may cause him to slide, even though talent-wise, he belongs in that top of the draft consideration?
I think it's a combination of a couple things. I think that's a good comparison. I think the fact is he never showed any real progress in his game. I also thought that they had him playing out of position at Michigan State. They used him at defensive end. He's more of a natural defensive tackle. And I believe that, yeah, he did not play hard on every down, out of position. It probably was a turnoff to him. Made his decision early on to enter the draft. You know, that whole Michigan State campaign in 2016 was a downer for everybody, so it had a weigh on him. But again, he's going to fall. It's tough to take big men who are perceived as lazy because they are sometimes the biggest busts of all. They get by on natural talent, and if you use an early pick and you get a guy, Quinton Coples, the New York Jets took him in the middle of round one a couple years ago, perfect example, just basically got by on natural talent, had a short career in the NFL, which is why a guy like McDowell, I would suspect, I have him right now ranked as a second-round choice, and I think that's where he'll end up.
Tony, let's get to the linebacker position, and the number one name there is Reuben Foster. I think if you ask most people, they would say that he's probably, just based off the film, a top five player in this draft, but a lot of people see him falling. And in your eyes, do you think it's more about the medical with his shoulders, or do you think it's about the incident at the combine with him getting dismissed because of something that happened at the hospital?
Well, it depends on what you consider falling. I mean, I always had Reuben Foster as a guy who was going to go anywhere from 8 to 15, and I still think he's going to end up 13 to the Arizona Cardinals if they don't surprise everybody and take a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes. So if he falls out of the top 15, to me, that is then he's sliding. I think it's more the injury concerns than it is the hospital issue at the combine. The hospital issue at the combine was an unfortunate incident, but the fact is you know what? It's just human nature, and I wrote about this the day after it happened. Some of these guys were up for almost 24 hours. They got to the hospital at 7 o'clock. They waited around. They didn't get back to their rooms until 3 o'clock in the morning. That's going to aggravate you and I. You and I are going to probably get a little vocal about that. It was an unfortunate incident. It doesn't seem to be a trend. The injury, though, especially to a linebacker who likes to drive his shoulders through ball carriers and play all out and basically is relentless, you know, that is a concern. The height is also a concern. The fact that he's solid but not great in coverage, you know, so teams will look at him as a two-down defender. That's a concern. I think the issue at the hospital during the combine really isn't huge. It's something that the media likes to talk about. But I think the medical issues, plus the fact is he a true three-down defender, are going to limit his options. In the end, I still think he ends up in the top half of round one.
Tony, Temple's Hassan Reddick has been generating buzz both locally and nationally. How high could he go in this draft?
And with good reason. And you know, just go back a little while ago. Go back to the beginning of the year. And I know Fran will tell you this because Fran and I talk about the draft 12 months a year. Hassan Reddick was a guy who was not even mentioned by scouts. He was not even rated by scouts. And here he is. He's going to be a mid-first-round selection. You know, there's talk about him being a top 15 pick. I think he's a perfect fit for the Baltimore Ravens, who need a successor to Terrell Suggs. They need a pass rusher. They need a guy like Hassan Reddick who, you know, plays smart, tough football. It's a great story. I think it'd be a great addition to for Baltimore. He could go a little bit higher. Maybe a team trades up to get him. But I think right now, Baltimore at 16 is a terrific fit.
Tony, one last question about the linebackers. Jared Davis out of Florida, he's battled some ankle issues over the last year or so. Is he a player who could surprise fans and be selected in the first round next Thursday?
Well, there's always surprises, and if Jared Davis ends up in the first round, it would be a surprise. I have him as a second-round pick. Again, you know, like Reuben Foster, not the tallest guy in the world, under 6'2". And more of a two-down player, but he's not Reuben Foster, and he's not Zach Cunningham. There's talk the New York Giants could take him, and I think that would be an option for the Giants if they don't like any of the offensive tackles or tight ends on the board, maybe a little bit later on, but I think Jared Davis is going to end up in round two.
Tony, let's talk about the cornerback spot, and obviously it's an area that a lot of Eagles fans are excited to hear more about. When does the first corner come off the board? When does that run start? Because we know that when you have so many players bunched in together, like it seems to be in this class, that there's going to be a run. When do you expect that first run to happen, and where is the ceiling? Who and when is the first corner off the board?
That's a good question. I think it's basically broken up into two parts. I think the first cornerback off the draft will be either the fifth pick to the Tennessee Titans or the sixth pick to the New York Jets, assuming those teams don't trade down. And then you could have one taken at 10, the Buffalo Bills. But I don't think the real run is going to start until the middle part of round one when Indianapolis selects, and then you'll get a bunch of cornerbacks going back to back to back. Who is the first cornerback going to be selected? That's a good question. You know, everyone loves Marshawn Lattimore, and he's a great athlete who's coming off a terrific campaign at Ohio State. You know, as far as my taste is concerned, I like his teammate, Garyon Connolly. He's not as fast, but he's a little bit bigger. He's got much, much better ball skills. He's more NFL-ready, and he's a guy who has significantly less downside risk when you compare him to Marshawn Lattimore as far as having more developed ball skills and not having the injury issues. I said this in a couple interviews. I just never understood how people all this love for Marshawn Lattimore while people dismiss Garyon Connolly. You go back to the film, Connolly was the much better cornerback. Lattimore had his flashes last year, and he made some good plays, but he was able to make it primarily because of that speed, because he was able to recover and make up for some mental mistakes. Connolly, as told to me by somebody at Ohio State who I've known for over a decade, basically for the past 2 years, did everything right every time he had to. He was called upon, and he always came up in the big games. In my opinion, I think Garyon Connolly will be the first cornerback selected, or should be the first cornerback selected. Let's put it this way. The first corner selected is going to come out of Ohio State, probably that fifth or sixth pick, and then the second one will be that could be that 10th pick to Buffalo. The run, I believe, will start around 14 or 15, where your Philadelphia Eagles and the Indianapolis Colts select.
So, Tony, if Connolly is the first cornerback to go off the board, who's number two? I know you mentioned Lattimore, but is there someone else, a Tre'Davious White or a player along those lines, who could be the second corner off the board?
No, I think it'll be Connolly, Lattimore in that order or reversed. I think the guy who could surprise and go higher than people suspect is Kevin King out of Washington. 6'3", a guy who's got great ball skills. The big question about Kevin King was how fast is he going to run, because he didn't show great speed on film. Went to the combine, ran in the 4.4s. People said, okay, he's got the speed. We just have to coach him to that speed. Went to his pro day. Unfortunately, the pro day that Sidney Jones tore his Achilles, which is what everyone talked about. What they didn't talk about from people who I spoke with who were there was what a great day Kevin King had. How basically here's a guy who's 6'3", almost 200 pounds, how effortless and smooth he was moving around the field. So I think the two Ohio State guys will be the first corners off the board. If there is a surprise, I think Kevin King will be selected earlier than people expect, and Marlon Humphrey could take a bit of a slide.
All right, Tony, let's go to the safeties. We'll stick with Ohio State. Malik Hooker, and I'm going to throw in Jamal Adams from LSU as well in this question. Is there any chance either of them slide all the way to number 14 to give the Eagles something to think about?
No, I think there's no chance at all. I think there's a better chance that I'm going to go see Led Zeppelin in a concert tonight than either of that, those guys slide to the 14th selection where the Eagles are. If on the off chance it does happen, it'd probably be Malik Hooker, and it would be something that's a big medical concern that teams have found out about. And at that case, it's a red flag, but no, don't see that happening at all.
Tony, last year there were some eyebrows raised when Carl Joseph was the number 14 pick. Keanu Neal was a first-round pick as well. Do you see any other surprises happening at the safety spot? Could a guy like Marcus Williams from Utah, Josh Jones, Obi Melifonwu, anybody from that safety spot sneaking into round one that would surprise people? Buda Baker as well from Washington?
The one guy you didn't mention, Justin Evans of Texas A&M. I mean, here's the guy who came in highly rated into his senior season, played great last year. He's an explosive guy. Didn't perform at the perform one day at the Senior Bowl, then had to leave because of injury. He's more than a straight line safety. He's got great lateral speed, excellent ball skills, very physical, very explosive against the run. I'm told that the Atlanta Falcons will consider him with the 30th pick of the draft because Dan Quinn likes a lot of safeties. He wants to play with three safeties. They need an upgrade at the position, even though they took Keanu Neal last year. So the surprise pick at the safety position in round one could be Justin Evans, Atlanta Falcons, outside chance that the Dallas Cowboys select them.
All right, Tony, I'm going to put you on the spot with this one. What do you think could be the biggest headline, the biggest shocker to come out of next Thursday night's first round?
Mitch Trubisky falling further than people expect. You know, people fall in love with the quarterback. Trubisky falls out of the top 10. Maybe Cleveland takes him at 12. And then the other one is when the first round is all said and done, maybe it's not a huge shocker, but Deshaun Watson's still available. I just don't see him as a first round prospect. Great college talent, great college quarterback, true leader, winner on the college field. It doesn't automatically mean that he's a real good next level prospect. So I think Watson's going to fall out of the first round.
He's the man, the myth, the legend, Tony Pauline from DraftAnalyst.com. Tony, phenomenal work as always. Thank you very much for joining us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.
Now it's time for Pick 6.
Phenomenal work there by Tony. So now it's time for our Pick 6. And I'm going to kick things off here. It's players who we look at the mock drafts and we say to ourselves, you know, who's a guy that maybe, as we asked Tony at the end, might slip into the end of the first round, or who's a player that's going to drop on draft night? You know, last year, Laramie Tunsil, I think everyone thought that he was going to be a definite top 10 selection. Then, of course, that video of him with the mask and the marijuana came out the night of the draft, just basically moments before it kicked off, and all of a sudden teams that might have considered selecting him were panicked, and he fell to number 13 to the Miami Dolphins, a team that's very happy with the selection at this point. You know, then you have also Carl Joseph, who's coming off a torn ACL. Well, he gets picked one spot after Laramie Tunsil. So a lot of things are going to happen. You know, teams right now, they're putting out their smoke screens. They don't want you to know what they're truly thinking. It's that time of the year where you're trying to sift through all the information. You're like, what's legit and what's not? And most of it's pretty fake, I would say, at this time of year. So with that in mind, are players who we think are going to be higher or lower than what we see in mock drafts? And I'm going to kick things off with a player who I think is going to go lower than what we're seeing in mock drafts, and that's a running back out of Florida State, Dalvin Cook. From a talent standpoint, you can argue that he might be the top running back in this year's class. Elite production at Florida State. You can make a case that he's probably the best Seminole running back in school history, and they've had some good ones over the year. Work done comes to mind. But some questions physically. Is he able to handle the load of a feature back at the next level? He's had three shoulder surgeries, two on one and one on the other. You have a lot of off-field concerns, a number of incidents dating back to high school with him. And then last but not least, he didn't have a great workout at the combine. So with all that put together and with some of the other talented backs in this year's class, you know, we pose a question to Tony. I don't know if he's even going to go in the first round.
It's a viable question, and I was glad it was asked because, honestly, these issues have been present with Dalvin Cook, even when he was being talked about as a top 10 selection back in the, we'll say, the late fall, early winter. But it's very interesting to see how his star has kind of fallen a little bit in this draft process. And the guy that I want to go with next is a player that I just have not seen the light on in terms of where people view him and how high. What Tony just mentioned, he could be the first quarterback off the board. And that is just mind-boggling to me that Patrick Mahomes from Texas Tech could be the first quarterback off the board. His physical upside is undeniable. He's got a great arm. He's accurate. He can make plays on the run. But the way that he plays in terms of out of structure and making play, the spontaneity of how he plays is so rare to see that succeed at the NFL level. And then also from the offense that he came from in the air raid, the track record from quarterbacks coming from that system is also not very good. So when you have those two hills that he's got to climb, he's got a lot going against him in terms of turning into a successful quarterback. To me, I think that he is a guy that could go, you know, day two. I think you could probably sell me on as a developmental player. But I think ultimately, if he goes to a team, like if, you know, there's the report, I think it was USA Today, Tom Palisaro put out that Bill O'Brien's obsessed with him and loves him. If he goes to Houston and has to start this year, I mean, that's going to be a train wreck. He might make some plays, but I think overall, I mean, that's not going to be a great situation for him long term. I think if he goes to a place that Tony mentioned, Arizona, which we would love because that would bump another player down to us. If he went to Arizona at 13th overall, sit behind Carson Palmer, learn from that veteran coaching staff, kind of ease your way into the NFL, I think that would be a good situation. I think Patrick Mahomes is a guy that is going to get overdrafted, unfortunately.
It's interesting because I think it was Mike Mayock who brought the comparison to Johnny Manziel.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very apt one.
He's a beefed up Johnny Manziel. He's got better physical tools.
I was just thinking the same thing. We were talking about spontaneity and, you know, that air raid offense, obviously the same program. I was thinking the same thing with Johnny Manziel. My first player here, I'm going to go with Reuben Foster as a player I think is going to go lower than people expect. And part of it, I think, is the incident at the Combine, although I do think that a lot of teams may look past that. As Tony said, maybe it's just a one-time thing. But his shoulders, the history of his shoulder injuries is something that scares me a little bit, because the reports that he went back to get it rechecked after he didn't get it checked at the Combine and it wasn't maybe healing the way that it's supposed to be, could be in line for another surgery at some point. So for a guy who needs to play physically and, you know, needs to play without thinking and be able to go up and make that big hit, I think that could be a real concern for Reuben Foster, and I think that could slide him maybe into, you know, the second half of round one, you know, after 15, where I think everyone kind of thinks that he's going to be a top 15 pick at this point.
And it's fascinating because Greg Cosell on last week's podcast said that he's a top three talent.
Yeah.
In this draft class. So, you know, whether or not the off-field incident will do anything to damage his stock, but definitely the injury. His agent did come out and say, well, he'll be ready for training camp. You know, is that going to be good enough for teams? I'm going to look on the bright side with my second pick here, and I'm shocked that Fran didn't beat me to the punch here, and he might still be salty over the fact that I took it. It's one of his favorite players, if not his favorite player, in this year's draft class, and that's Tre'Davious White, the cornerback from LSU.
That's my guy.
Four-year starter in the SEC, played on the right side in the slot. You know, good size, not elite, doesn't have tremendous athleticism, but when you look at the production, also brings great value on special teams, where he's a punt returner and a gunner as well. You know, he's someone who can instantly help any secondary. You know, LSU has turned out some tremendous defensive backs. Let's look at Jalen Mills right here in Philadelphia. I think he's a player who, because he maybe is not as flashy, isn't getting the love that maybe a Kevin King or a Marshawn Lattimore is getting. But in terms of a guy you could probably throw in there in day one, he earned his degree in college. You know, the intangibles are apparently off the charts. Tre'Davious White is someone who plays a premier position and I think will go higher than who the experts are thinking at this point.
I 100% agree. It wouldn't shock me at all if he was like the consensus surprise top 20 pick in this draft. I mentioned Patrick Mahomes earlier as a guy that I think will go lower than the consensus. I think a player that will go higher than the consensus, and we talked about him a little bit with Tony earlier, is Florida linebacker Jarrad Davis, who I've been a huge fan of throughout the process, and I think he's an excellent player. I thought, you know what, he fits, to me, what I think a Jim Schwartz linebacker would look like in terms of his physicality at the point of attack, and all the buzz on him was, especially because of the ankle injury, oh, he's going to be a second-round pick. I would have loved him at 43. But now it seems like he's getting a little bit more buzz that he could bump up. During my research over the summer, I talked with Edgar Thompson, who covers the team down in Gainesville, said that he's everything you want, the ultimate leader on that team, and everybody in that program looked up to Jarrad Davis. And then you read Bruce Feldman from Fox Sports. He talked with Randy Shannon, who's the linebackers coach there. He said that Jonathan Davis has the competitiveness of John Vilma, the athleticism of John Beeson, the football knowledge of Ray Lewis. Temple head coach Jeff Collins said he's got the desire, the drive, and willpower, highest level there is. Every rep he takes is at game level focus and practice. I think, and then he goes to the pro day, tests out of bounds in the pro day. I mean, he was outstanding. He's got great size. He's physical. I think Jarrad Davis is going to go higher than people think. It wouldn't shock me if he snuck in to the top 20 in this draft either.
Yeah, he seems like a guy who just plays violent. Like, he always seems like he's playing angry.
Gosh, I love that kid, man.
So the next guy on my list here is a player that I think is going to go higher than a lot of people think. And it's not necessarily because I'm very high on him as a player, but he's a quarterback, and it's Davis Webb from California. And Fran, I know you talked about Patrick Mahomes and how you don't think that he's a first-round talent. I'm sure you don't think that Davis Webb is a first-round talent either.
Patrick Mahomes beat Davis Webb in a quarterback competition 2 years ago. That's why Webb transferred.
Right. So, but we see it happen with quarterbacks all the time. They're always going to go higher. And there's been some buzz about teams maybe potentially moving back into the late first round. I've seen in mock drafts Cleveland trading back in to pick 32 or 31 to get a guy like Davis Webb. Just because, you know, I think he throws a nice ball. Maybe that's the best thing that you can say about him. He's got decent arm strength. But again, it's that same system that Jared Goff came out of, that air raid system. Will it translate into the NFL? That's the big question with Davis Webb, but I do think that a team is going to take a chance on him a lot higher than most people think.
Hopefully Davis Webb knows that the sun sets in the west. So with that being said, it's time to transition to our unofficial visit. Fran had a chance back at the Senior Bowl to catch up with West Virginia cornerback Rasul Douglas.
The unofficial visit.
Here now with West Virginia cornerback Rasul Douglas. And Rasul, for those of you who stumbled over. All right, here we go. Ready? Here we go. And three, two. Here now with West Virginia cornerback Rasul Douglas. Rasul, for those who have yet to see you play, can you give us a quick scouting report?
Just a physical, aggressive ball. Yeah.
So talk about the ball hawk. So those ball skills, are those natural? Is that something you had to improve on throughout your career?
I still work on them from time to time. A lot of but playing receiver in high school and always playing receiver, just when I'm playing around after practice, I always keep my ball skills good.
One of the things that I saw when I watched you play, a lot of similarities to Darryl Worley, who was a mid-round pick, obviously had a big impact on the Carolina Panthers this year. How do you compare yourself to him, and what has your relationship been like with him going to the NFL? Have you gotten advice from him throughout the process?
I don't compare myself to anyone. Everyone steps in life are different, so I don't compare myself to him, but I still talk to him. He's still one of my big brothers. He always FaceTime me, ask me how I'm doing, and I ask him a lot of questions because he played in the NFL and he knows what it's like and what it takes. So I always pick his ear and just try to find out things that I don't know that he knows since he played in the league.
It's interesting that whenever we talk to players down at this event, they talk about some of the mental things that people don't really think about going into the league. Has there been one thing from a mental side that you know you need to really hone in on moving into the NFL?
Just a winning state mind, I guess. Just always knowing that you're the best and you're a winner. You just got to have a mindset of just dominance and competition. I would think that's the biggest thing.
It seems like you're very, very competitive and confident, and that's one area that I think at the cornerback position, very, very important. Is there another trait that you think is really, really important to play cornerback at the NFL level?
Memory. I would say memory is kind of one of the biggest things because I know still sometimes today, like if I get beat, or like someone catches a pass on me that I should have been there, I get mad at myself. And I just think about it too long. And as a corner, you got to be able to just wipe it away and say, oh, it's next play. I can make it again.
What's one area after hearing back from feedback from scouts that you know you definitely want to improve on moving to the league?
Everything. I think there's always room to improve as a player. There's always room. And you want to keep it room. You're never going to reach where everything is just the greatest. You know what I mean? So there's always everything. I want to improve on everything.
All right, Rasul, appreciate the time. Best of luck throughout the process.
Appreciate it, man.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, so it's time for your questions in our draft mailbag, and Fran has compiled them, so he's going to lead the show here.
I'm going to lead it. So first one from Taylor Bolton, who's a constant listener to the show. What mid to late round linebackers fit best in Jim Schwartz's system? Is it a guy like an Anthony Walker from Northwestern? Is there a Jayon Brown from UCLA, a Deion Hollins from UCLA? Any linebackers day two, day three that stand out to you two?
You know my
as
answer.
Guys, I know your answer. You've been Bulware, okay?
And I'm not saying he's a day two player, but he's probably a day three guy who, you know, it's kind of been my shtick throughout this entire offseason of, you know, wanting him on the Eagles. But in all honesty, I know he's not the fastest guy. I know he's not the strongest guy. But as a late round kind of developmental guy, sure, why not?
I know we've talked about Walker before on the podcast here, so it's going to be interesting to see how they address the position because Jordan Hicks had a chance to speak with the media, and they were peppering him with questions about the depth at linebacker. And, you know, right now you got Jordan Hicks, Nigel Bradham, and then Michael Kendricks, you know, and there's certainly been buzz about whether or not the Eagles could potentially move Kendricks at some point, maybe even during the draft. So you do have Joe Walker, who's coming back off the ACL injury, who looked promising as a backup Mike. You have Najee Good, who can play all three positions. So, you know, they didn't play a ton of base, you know, last year, you know, kind of to have the two linebackers, Hicks and Bradham on the field at the same time, and then no third. You know, depending on what shakes out of cornerback, you wonder what they're going to do this year to kind of rectify that situation.
Yeah, I think if you look at it in a couple different ways, you know, they selected Joe Walker late last year, and he was an athletic freak. He was one of those guys, the pro day workout warrior types. And if you look at that realm, I mean, Duke Riley from LSU was really athletic. Alex, you and I got to see him down at the Senior Bowl, and he's a great sideline-to-sideline player. I think a guy like Blair Brown, who I didn't get a chance to watch until recently, was one of the best combine testers at the linebacker position. He is athletic. He's instinctive. He's really physical. Remember, with the linebacker spot in this defense, they have to be able to handle themselves at the point of attack because you're going to have some offensive linemen up in your grill pretty quickly. So they need to be able to handle themselves in the run game. And so a player like Blair Brown would intrigue me as well.
How does Duke Riley compare to Deion Jones, who came out a year
Interesting.
Ago?
I think the difference is that Jones, I think, was a little bit quicker to see things than Riley. I think the athletic ability is pretty comparable, though. And Riley has a great special teams background, and he was an outstanding special teamer in the beginning of his career there at LSU. He's a really good player. He was actually better in person. He was a guy that really, I think, helped himself, in my eyes, going down to Mobile and seeing him. All right, next question. This is from Sean Eham, 73. It's clear that the Eagles want more speed at receiver. Who are some mid to late round guys nobody is talking about who could fit that role? Love the podcast.
Does Sheldon Gibson count as a
mid to late? Yeah, I think so.
From West Virginia. Sure. Spicer on the outside there. Yep. I mean, he's someone who comes into play there. That's one that comes to mind.
I think Carlos Henderson is another name.
Yeah.
He's probably more of a second round, third round guy, not necessarily a day three, but he's another stretch the field kind of player.
Dede Westbrook from Oklahoma. I mean, obviously there's other issues there, and every team is going to work through that, the Eagles included, depending on how you view Curtis Samuel. Do you view him as a running back that can catch out of the backfield, or do you view him as a receiver that can line up in the backfield? I think that Curtis Samuel absolutely brings that explosive potential. Katie Cannon from Baylor, he ran sub 4.4 at his pro day. There are a few guys. I mean, there's some speed in this class. Ardarius Stewart, I think, has some speed as well from Alabama. He's a guy that's gotten some love. There's some interesting players that can run in this class.
It's interesting about Carlos Henderson is his yards after the catch ability.
So good.
You know, very, very good. I mean, you look at the numbers. Obviously, the Louisiana Tech offense, a spread offense that's, you know, basically tailor-made for him to get large numbers. But this past year, it was the conference's offensive and special teams player of the year. I mean, the numbers that he's put up at the consistent rate quite remarkable. I know some people think that he could have gone back and should have gone back for his last year down in Louisiana Tech, but still probably a day two selection there who could be in play for the Eagles.
At Eagles Troll wants to know, are there any safeties you could see the Eagles draft to use in nickel now and then develop as a starting safety for the future? I think depending on how you view a guy like Desmond King, he could be someone. I think Desmond King can play corner as well, but some people do think that he could be a safety. Cam Sutton is a guy that comes to mind along the same role, but Rudy Ford from Auburn, obviously Buda Baker from Washington, that's the name that comes to mind, I think, for a lot of people when it comes to that kind of a role. I'm just kind of going through the list here. Lorenzo Jerome was a guy that we got to see down at the Senior Bowl, Alex, who had an awful combine but was really, really good in the All-Star game circuit, had two interceptions in the Senior Bowl game. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else that comes to mind there at the safety spot that has that nickel versatility, but it is a very good safety class overall. All right, next one. At Wildy Farm wants to know, Greg Cosell compares Christian McCaffrey to Reggie Bush. Lance Zierlein compares him to Tiki Barber. Which is more accurate, and do you guys have a comparison?
So let's go through it again. So Jeremiah had Cosell had Reggie Bush.
Cosell was Reggie Bush. Lance Zierlein was Tiki Barber.
I feel that McCaffrey's more physical in between the tackles than Bush.
Yeah, I would agree. I 100% agree.
I think that's my biggest thing there is because you look at the type of player he is. You hear he could be a satellite weapon. You know, has the great route running ability, can line up all the formation. You think, oh, well, he can't run between tackles. No, he did a very good job of doing that at Stanford.
I think if you view Christian McCaffrey as Reggie Bush in the NFL Reggie Bush, not USC Reggie Bush, if you view him as Reggie Bush, I don't think you take him in the top 20.
No.
Yeah, you don't take him in the top 20. Like, if you think, I know the piece he's referring to is Tim McManus's piece on ESPN. Mm-hmm. And Cosell even said, he could be an upscale Theo Riddick. And, if that's the case, if that's how you view him, I don't think you take him top 20. I think he's got to be more. Like, I've always compared him to Brian Westbrook.
That's who I was just
if he's Brian
if
Westbrook,
he's Brian
you take
Westbrook,
him.
You take him at number 14,
yep,
right? You don't think
him.
Twice about it.
Definitely. If you,
even though Westbrook, people will say, oh, Westbrook was a third-round pick, but his production once he got to the NFL was much higher than a third-round pick.
Exactly right. And that's what everyone says, oh, you can find Jamal Charles. But if you know he's Jamal Charles, you're not taking him in the third round. I mean, that's you could say that right. about – Tom Brady.
That's funny. Jamal Charles is actually the other name that I was going to bring up because I think that's kind of the guy that he reminds me of. And we know Doug Peterson's history with Jamal Charles. So that's kind of the name that popped up in my head.
Sure. So then the next one, at Chris Wentland wants to know, thoughts on Quincy Wilson from Florida and whether or not he could be a day one starter?
I think he could be. He was getting a lot of buzz as a potential first round pick. He was mocked to the Eagles really early on in the process. I think I would love him in round two, but I just don't think I would take him in the first round, even with a trade back. I think he's a guy who plays with a lot of confidence, and that's what Jim Schwartz really loves in his cornerbacks. He's kind of a bigger guy for a corner.
Definitely.
So I think he has some of the traits, both physically and mentally, that Jim Schwartz likes. So I do think that if he were drafted here, say in the second round or so, I do think he could be a day one starter here.
I like the size that Quincy Wilson brings to the table, and you know that he's been tested because he's been on the opposite end of guys like Tease Tabor, you know, Vernon Hargraves, where he wasn't the number one guy, so he was the one who quarterbacks were going to target from that standpoint. So certainly, what was the nickname that Tease Tabor came up with at the combine? It was like they were pick your poison.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, when you're trying to throw it in either direction. So I think when you look at the Eagles situation, if you're taking a cornerback first, second round, you're probably projecting him to come into the lineup and be a starter, a potential starter, at least on day one.
I would agree that if you take him on day two, I love the value there on day two. I wasn't big on him in round one, but I think that if you take a Quincy Wilson in round two, that means you feel comfortable in his ability to fit in whatever defense that you're running. Physical kid, one of the most physical corners in the draft. I love his length. He got better at the line of scrimmage and press coverage this year. I do like Quincy Wilson in that range. Last question comes from at Reggie Monster, and I like this question. I wanted to save it for last. The question was, who is the most surefire pick you'd think would fall to 14? And I'm going to rephrase it slightly.
What do you mean sure? Wait, what do you mean surefire?
I want to rephrase it this way. Who is the player that would fall to the Eagles at 14 that would be too good to pass up on in your mind, regardless of what the perceived need is? Like, you know, if Solomon Thomas fell, or I mean, if Solomon Thomas, I think people would like that. But let's say Malik Hooker, or if, you know, Leonard Fournette, I think a lot of people think, would you have to change the offense? No, screw it. He is too good to pass up on.
Yeah.
We'll do what we have to
guy?
Do. You have to pick one guy who is too good to pass up on.
Leonard Fournette, I would not pass up on. Malik Hooker, I would not pass up on.
I wouldn't pass on Malik Hooker either.
OJ Howard's a really interesting case.
One too. Yep.
It's a really, really interesting case. But if I had to pick one guy who I would not pass on,
who's going to be there? Because OJ Howard may be there at 14. That's the thing.
He could be.
Well, what about Gary and Conley? What if he's there?
A lot of the buzz has him going top 10 now, man, or at least to 11. Like, it seems like New Orleans now is his floor, as
what
high
about
as
Mike
six.
Williams.
Mike
there's
Williams,
so many
Corey
of these
Davis,
guys. And you said it earlier. You really like where the Eagles are at because there's so many of these players who are probably, you know, potentially going to fall to the Eagles.
They can't all go in the top 13.
Correct. So I don't know. What's your guys' take on it?
The Gary and Conley one's interesting because a month ago
you would have said Lattimore probably, but.
Well, no, you wouldn't have Conley in the conversation as someone who you have to hope he could fall to the Eagles at 14.
Yeah, now you have to hope he falls. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm taking Myles Garrett out of the conversation because he's going number one.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, you would take him out.
I mean, after that, when you look at the combination of talent and need, I mean, I think that's probably where I would lean.
I think my guy on defense would be Malik Hooker is too good to pass up, and on offense it would be Corey Davis too good to pass up.
Corey Davis, interesting.
I think
I agree with you on Malik Hooker. Yeah. I think he's way too good to pass up. And on the offensive side,
is it OJ
or Fournette? It's either OJ, Fournette, or Mike Williams, and it's probably it's probably OJ Howard. And I'm surprising myself with that answer. But I just think he can bring so much to an offense. And Leonard Fournette's a great player, but I think, you know, I know the Eagles would tailor their offense to him a little bit more, but I just think that OJ Howard would be too good to pass up.
I'm continuing to hear more. Like, I was listening to Josh Norris and Eric Galco. They had a conversation on their podcast, on Roto World podcast, and they both think Corey Davis could fall to like the 20s and 30s. Man, like that would be crazy. That'd be crazy. But
why
hasn't
though?
Worked out.
Is it, why?
Because he hasn't worked out. Because he hasn't worked out. But you can say the same thing about Malik Hooker.
Yeah. I mean,
he hasn't done anything either.
I thought the eye in the sky didn't lie.
Well, it doesn't. I don't think it does. So yeah, that was all quite. And Reggie, that, I wanted to save that one for last because I thought that was a really good question.
That is a good one. Yes. So I think that's gonna do it for us here.
I think that's it.
So we got one more before the
next
draft.
Week's
that's
the
it?
Big one.
Next week. So jam packed week. Okay, we'll have the mock draft podcast where we will get input from reporters who cover the other teams ahead of the Eagles, and then, you know, we'll leave it to get to number 14 and see who's on the table there, who's on the board for the Eagles, and debate who the team should select. Our Eagles Draft Central preview show, presented by Deaton Watson, comes your way next Wednesday, and then live draft coverage from the NovaCare Complex all weekend long, which you can follow on philadelphia.com, the Eagles mobile app. So definitely want to make sure that you're here for that. It's going to be myself. We're going to have Ike Reese. We're going to have Ross Tucker. We're going to have Dave Spadaro, Fran Duffy, Greg Cosell. Alex Smith is going to be on location. He's going to be interviewing the first-round pick, assuming he's there.
Correct.
Hopefully he's there.
Correct.
But wall-to-wall cover is the draft's in Philadelphia. We hope that you'll have a chance to check it out. It's supposed to be an amazing experience. The open-air theater where fans can we'll be able to look into the theater and see Roger Goodell announcing the Eagles selection there, number 14. Definitely going to be a historic weekend, so we hope that you're down there for it. But, you know, have your phone tune in to our Eagles Draft Central coverage while attending the draft.
Next week is also episode number 100 for the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast.
Did you time it just like that?
No, I didn't, but it just really worked out that way.
Isn't that was a cheap plug.
Isn't that fantastic.
We don't do free plugs on this podcast, Fran.
So a special thanks to Melissa Kelly for pinch hitting behind the glass producing this week, and thank you all for the great questions and the support. The ratings have been amazing. The traffic we've been getting on this podcast has been phenomenal the last few weeks. So we want to finish out strong here. So for all of us here at the Philadelphia Eagles, thank you very much to listening to another episode of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. We'll be back next week.